All right, I'm going to leave this up for a moment before I go over to Genesis 29. So where we are is Genesis 29, and this section, really there's three chapters that are going on here, chapter 29, 30, and 31. So when Jacob departs from the when he leaves the land, he is we see three chapters, various episodes before he comes back into the land in chapter 32. So here we're seeing in Jacob's life his experience outside of the land and basically where the tribes come from. And so what I want you to see is we're gonna see a chiasm. So Laura's not here, so she can't tell us what a chiasm is. But you know what a chiasm is, Jude? Go ahead and tell him.
So a chiasm has two similar things on the top and the bottom, and moving forward again, and then the middle point is the most important point that happens at middle, and it's called a chiasm because of the Greek letter key.
Good, yeah. So here's the Greek letter key. So it works its way in, and then it works its way out. And usually, it doesn't always work this way, where the most important thing is in the middle. But typically, that's where the main message is going to be. So. So here, what we have is 29 verses 1 to 14. This is where Jacob meets Laban. So he arrives, but we should actually put it this way. He arrives in Haran, and he enters Laban's household. Then we have chapter 29. Verses 15 through 30, and this is where Laban outwits Jacob. And then in the middle, we have 29, 31 through 30, 24, and this is where you have the birth of Jacob's sons. All right, and what's important about Jacob's sons?
Tribes.
Yeah, the tribes, the twelve tribes. This is the beginnings of that. Obviously, Levi becomes kind of this is a tribe, but separate tribe. Joseph gets a blessing, a double blessing, and so his sons actually take up two of the spots, and so this is why this the central component of these episodes focuses on the tribes and how the tribes came to be. So then you work your way out. This is 30, 25 through 43. And this is where Jacob outwits Laban. Anybody remember what happens with Jacob and Laban?
Does he steal his flocks?
Yeah, he doesn't steal the flocks. But no, he doesn't. Like,
right.
He just does something crazy that shouldn't work. Yeah, good. And then we end up in chapter 31, and this is Jacob's departure. All right, so that's kind of the big picture of what's going on in the next next three chapters, and then when he departs from Haran, he goes right back into having to meet Esau. So he hasn't escaped trouble. Now, before we read, I'm going to read chapter 29, verses 1 through 30. But before we do, just some context. What does God appears to Jacob at Bethel, right? House of God. What does God promise to Jacob? Yeah, I mean, he passes on the blessing of Abraham. So yes, he's going to have land, he's going to have seed, he's going to have blessing. So the promises of Abraham and Isaac are passed on to him. God does that. Isaac had done that too when he was leaving. But in the immediate future, what does God promise for Jacob? Or what does God promise to do for Jacob?
Take care of your feet.
Yeah. So make sure he has all the basic needs that he has. And then also to protect him, keep him from harm. And that's like the baseline. What Jacob's going to be amazed about is that he comes back not just having survived, but having flourished, and that against the odds. Okay, so God has promised to provide and to protect Jacob. Provide for and to protect Jacob. So anything to add or clarify there? Any questions there on just the setup? So we're kind of entering into some new territory outside of the land for Jacob, and we'll be coming back out. So anything to say there? No? Good? Okay. So let's get into this. Now we need to make sure that it's not required that we have Mark and Nancy and Joey here, Joey and Michelle. It's not a requirement for them to be here to have discussion and engagement, okay? So we need to show them what we have, okay? Like, we can do this, all right? Okay, I'm kidding. If you don't want to say anything, just we'll make it awkward silence, and we'll move on.
You need somebody to say Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the answer, right? I mean, if it's connected. Just make sure Jesus isn't connected to Laban. Yeah. So if I ask a question about Laban, then just say the devil or something. All right. So I'm going to read verses 1 to 30. Then Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the people of the east. As he looked, he saw a well in the field, and behold, three flocks of sheep lying beside it. For out of that well the flocks were watered. The stone on the well's mouth was large, and when all the flocks were gathered there, the shepherds would roll the stone from the mouth of the well and water the sheep, and put the stone back in its place over the mouth of the well. Jacob said to them, "My brothers, where do you come from?" They said, "We are from Haran." He said to them, "Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?" They said, "We know him." He said to them, "Is it well with him?" They said, "It is well. And see, Rachel, his daughter, is coming with the sheep." He said, "Behold, it is still high day. It is not time for the livestock to be gathered together. Water the sheep and go, pasture them." But they said, We cannot until all the flocks are gathered together and the stone is rolled from the mouth of the well. Then we water the sheep." While he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. Now, as soon as Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, Jacob came near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and wept aloud. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's kinsman, and that he was Rebekah's son, and she ran and told her father. As soon as Laban heard the news about Jacob, his sister's son, he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. Jacob told Laban all these things. And Laban said to him, "Surely you are my bone and my flesh." And he stayed with him a month. Then Laban said to Jacob, "Because you are my kinsman, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what shall your wages be?" Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were weak, but Rachel was beautiful in form and appearance. Jacob loved Rachel, and he said, "I will serve you 7 years for your younger daughter, Rachel." Laban said, "It is better that I give her to you than that I should give her to any other man. Stay with me." So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of the love he had for her. Then Jacob said to Laban, "Give me my wife that I may go into her, for my time is completed." So Laban gathered together all the people of the place and made a feast. But in the evening he took his daughter Leah and brought her to Jacob, and he went into her. Laban gave his female servant Zilpah to his daughter Leah to be her servant. And in the morning, behold, it was Leah! And Jacob said to Laban, "What is this you have done to me? Did I not serve with you for Rachel? Why then have you deceived me?" Laban said, "It is not so done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. Complete the week of this one, and we will give you the other also in return for serving me another 7 years." Jacob did so and completed her week. Then Laban gave him his daughter Rachel to be his wife. Laban gave his female servant Bilhah to his daughter Rachel to be her servant. So Jacob went into Rachel also, and he loved Rachel more than Leah, and served Laban for another 7 years. All right, so what observations do you have? What questions come up? What do you have?
Laban is just like Jacob.
Laban is just like Jacob, except what? He's better.
Jacob or Laban?
Laban is better at deceiving than Jacob.
Okay. He did his match, didn't he?
He has met his match. Yes. Yes. Now how does Laban, we'll jump down, how does Laban deceive, how does he trick Jacob?
Well, he thinks he's marrying Rachel.
Good. So So that is in verse 18, Jacob says, "I will serve you 7 years for your younger daughter, Rachel." So he specifies younger and Rachel, right? And we've already been told, Moses has told us, the older was Leah and the younger was Rachel. Now, what does Laban say in verse 19?
"Can't marry the younger one before the older one."
No, he doesn't say that yet.
Oh. In which verse?
In verse 19.
He said he'd give her to him.
Younger. Her.
Her.
Her. And then I should give her to any other man.
Her.
Right? And then it comes, and then, you know, the seven years of working, he thinks it's for Rachel. But all the while, Laban, for 7 years, he holds on to this cultural custom. We don't marry off the younger before the older. That's not our custom. And so he could have told him that, but he didn't, right? So yeah, it's the information that he withholds that sets up the deceit. What else?
Jacob must have been pretty much a stud. He rolled that stone away by himself.
Yeah, the huge stone, and he's doing it all by himself. Oh, by the way, this brings... So that's actually the thing. The focus is not on Rachel. It's the focus is on the fact that that Rachel's connected to Laban.
I used to get off the midnight and drive to Gerard to see Beth.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I don't know if I could do that.
That's not much of a stone roll.
Um, But to pick up on that, I was doing some more study about how old Jacob was. We actually have a timestamp later on when Joseph's 30 years old, and then when he becomes the prime minister, second in charge over Egypt, and then Jacob tells Pharaoh how old he is, and I can't remember how old that is that he says, but that's still within that. It's basically when he shows up in Egypt, they're 2 years into the famine. So it's been 9 years, basically. Yeah, 9 years since Joseph became second in command. So he's 39. And so we can do the math from there. And so he's in his 70s at this point. So I need to take back what I've said for a couple of times. John MacArthur's right in his study Bible that Jacob is on the older side of young here. So
I think Jacob would have known about the custom, about the younger and the older.
You think he would have?
Yeah.
Why do you think so? So he is outside of the land. He doesn't have any exposure to that. The only family exposure he has to marriage is that his older brother has gone off and just gotten married himself, right? And so perhaps maybe he's aware of stuff, but has a cultural custom kept Jacob from doing what he wants to do anyway? It hasn't. So even if he was aware of it, it doesn't keep him from doing what he does. And that's actually important because in chapter 29 here, or in the beginning, in verses 1 to 14, he encounters a cultural custom before he gets to being deceived, right? So the sheep or the shepherds say he says in verse 7, hey, it's still high day. It's not time for the livestock to be gathered together. Water the sheep and go pasture them. You don't need to wait. Verses 1 through 3 just basically tells us what's going on. You don't need to wait for all of these, for everybody to come. And the shepherds are like, well, that's the way we do it. That's our cultural custom. And how does Jacob respond? He takes matters into his own hands, right? Removes the stone. And there's some other things as we go through this. But the verses 1 to 14 basically set up, they introduce the whole episode of Jacob seeking to do what he wants to do, but he's running into he's running into somebody who's better at deceiving than he is. He can't just do what he wants to do. So he's at the mercy of Laban, and he is, yeah, and he gets taken advantage of.
Jacob's mother was. This is her brother. So they had a lot of deceivers.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So there's the connection. No, we talked about this.
Yeah,
Beth, we talked about this. Rebecca, she's a runner.
Yeah.
Rebecca's a runner.
She's just like her brother.
She's just like her brother. Beth's not taking it. Just remember, Rebecca's the one who came up with the plan to deceive Isaac. So that's where that's coming from. So it's not because we're anti-Rebecca or anything like that. So good. What else?
Encircling the word stone.
I did that last time. And that seems to kind of set a theme for that. So, yeah, we'll talk about that in a moment.
Also notice that this is another man by a well getting married to the first person.
Yeah, so there's this is a type scene. This is a theme. You have a man showing up at a well and a marriage resulting from it, from the meeting. So speaking of which, where have we seen something like this before? We just brought up Rebecca. So what chapter was this that we saw that before? The way I remember this is that chapter 24 has like 60 some odd verses, and most of them repeat themselves. And so it's chapter 24. That's where Abraham's servant meets Rebecca. And he's the one who says, let the first woman come, who comes, like, let that be the woman, right? So Jacob has something similar, but then the differences are what are key. Jacob's not so bent on meeting Rachel. He's bent on meeting Laban. He wants to meet Laban first. His love for Rachel is not expressed until later on. And we'll talk about the kiss. The kiss isn't as romantic or as weird as we might think. So, anything else?
What is it that's significant about the land of the East?
The land of the East, yeah. The East seems to be the place where it's always the place. Well, and this makes sense because if you go west in Canaan or in Israel, then you're going into the sea, so there's like no place to go. But in the East, there's a theme, especially in Genesis, where if you go to the East, you're going out of the land. You're seemingly going out of God's presence if you tie it to Eden. Now, what has changed here is that God promises to be with Jacob, even outside the land. So he, in going to the East, he's going outside of the land. He's going outside of the place where blessing is seemingly tied to. But it's a way to say he's going into foreign territory. Yeah. Good. Anything else?
You were asking if you're saying that how old Jacob was. He presented himself to Pharaoh. He was 130.
Yeah.
Genesis 47 verses.
Yeah. So that would mean, and if Joseph is 39 at that point, then he's in his 90s. Or how old is he? How old was he then when Joseph was born then? 39 minus 130, right? So that's 89? Yeah. So, and remember, all the children, Dinah might be an exception here, but all the children are born within a 14-year span because Moses actually makes a note before going into the episode about the flocks. He makes a note that after Joseph was born, so obviously Benjamin's not born, so he's born inside the land, so that would be one. And Dinah's also born outside of the land. But so you have all of those children born within that 14-year span. And I actually did I have a scratch pad somewhere and did kind of the math of how that would work, like with the 9 or 10 months and obviously four different women and things like that. And it's possible. And so outside of this being God's word and that it's true, mathematically it works out. So it does mean that there were the ladies were fertile. I mean, that's what it means. So it doesn't appear like there was the weaning was going on, and that's when fertility was starting back up. It seemed like it was just constant. So yeah, thank you for looking that up. So yeah, I was wrong. He's 70-something. No, when I was like, no, I don't buy that. Because there was the 40-year-old thing. That's how old Esau was. And so, like, no, he would have been around 40. This happened around. But no, he was like, he was single for another 30-plus years after Esau's had, you know, gotten married three times. So I think that's my own cult. Like, I can't imagine that, but. But that shows some of Isaac's passivity. He's not out looking for a wife for Jacob, so apparently, or for Esau. So, okay, what else? All right, we'll go through these first 14 verses. That'll probably be the only probably what we have time for. tonight, and we'll leave the deception off till the next time. All right, so then Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the people of the east. So he's going outside of the land, but he is going with God's protection, as the end of chapter 28 tells us. As he looked, he saw a well in a field, and behold, three flocks of sheep lying beside it, for out of that well the flocks were watered. So we're being given information that's important, and it's going to continue on into the rest of verse 2 and then verse 3. We're being given information that you would think is not necessary for us to know. Like, why spend time telling us about this well and a stone and the flocks, and why do that? And the reason, I think, is because this episode is setting up the deception for the next Jacob's deception, and what we do it's not our custom to do this, and the custom word is used in here. So, but this word for field, this is basically pasture land. So it's not cultivated. And obviously the flocks are there. So you have three flocks of sheep lying beside this well. And again, a well is not necessarily this small circle thing that's got a shaft down into the ground accessing the water. It could be a little, it could be actually really sophisticated as far as having stairs go down, and that may be where the stone comes in. It could also be just a circular well. So the one that Rebecca's going up and down, she's running up and down a flight of stairs to water all these camels. That's definitely not one of those,
like
one of these wells.
There's a rock on top or something.
Like, yeah, that. And there's a stone. There's a stone on the well's mouth, and that's large. So you've got three, you're in a field, you're in a pasture, three flocks of sheep, and so that's a lot of sheep lying beside it, and it was out of that well that the flocks are being were watered, so this is customary. The stone on the well's mouth was large, so we find out about this stone. If it's a large stone, then it's likely that it doesn't take just one person to move it. It takes a bunch, and so that may be why the shepherds are waiting. We got to wait till everybody's here so we can get this stone off. Either way, they do point out that this is just what we do. We wait. We wait for everybody. And when all the flocks were gathered, that's what we find out here in verse 3, were gathered there, the shepherds would roll the stone from the mouth of the well and water the sheep. Now, with this rolling, that makes me think of not something that's set on top of what we think of as a well, with that, you know, round and a shaft into the ground, but that it is, it's basically an access point for a spring. And so that's kind of what, with this roll. Does anybody have something different than roll in verse 3? Yeah, it's roll and LSB. And so that's why I don't think he's sliding it off. It is rolling it away. So rolling the stone from the mouth of the well and water the sheep, and then put the stone back in its place over the mouth of the well. So the custom here in verses 2 and 3, we're basically saying the shepherds wait until everybody's there so that everybody's involved in rolling the stone away. So that's what Jacob doesn't know. All right, we know it. Jacob doesn't know it. And that'll be important for when, as we proceed here. So Jacob said to them, "My brothers." Why say my brothers?
He's a deceiver.
We don't need to necessarily jump there, but I mean,
it's not like customary.
So let's continue on here. Just I'll read through the whole exchange, going through verse 8. And just listen to how Jacob talks in contrast to how the shepherds talk. "My brothers, where do you come from?" "We're from Haran," he said. "Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?" We know him. Is it well with him? It is well. And look, Rachel, his daughter, is coming with the sheep. Behold, it's still high day. It's not time for the livestock to be gathered together. Why do the sheep and go? Pasture them. We cannot until all the flocks are gathered together and the stone is rolled from the mouth of the well. Then we water the sheep. So I'm trying to capture the exchange there. At the beginning, the shepherds, are they talkative?
No.
No, they're not talkative. It's just the basic information. And Jacob, when he talks to them, he's like, hey, embrace, we're engaging, like, people, I see people, I want to talk to people. And I've been moving in the direction of Haran. And so is Laban here, and all, like, he's actively seeking to engage with these guys, and these guys are not having it, right? For whatever reason. But then they bring up Rachel, like, oh, you're looking for Laban? Rachel's who you want to talk to, because after all, she's his daughter. So don't talk to us anymore, talk to her. And then he brings up the well. Like, why are you guys here at this time of day? And why are you waiting? And so on and so forth. And that's when they're like, okay, we need to shut this guy down so he goes away with this random guy with his staff and all of that. So it's a he is not being given a hearty welcome at the place. All right. And that'll contrast with somebody else that we'll see here in a moment. So where do you come from? We're from Haran. This is exactly where he wants to be. He wants to be in this area. This is where Rebekah and Isaac sent him. And so this checks off one of his responsibilities. Then he goes to Laban. All right, do you know Laban, the son of Nahor? And we know him. Okay, good. Now we know Laban. So Haran, Laban, this is like everything that Jacob wants, everything that Jacob needs out of his mission. These are the first steps. He said to them, is it well with him? It is well. So yeah, he's still alive, right? So all of these things are good. And look, he has a daughter, which is part of the point for him being here, right? Is to get married. And she's coming with the sheep. So they are telling him information that he needs to know to fulfill his mission, but they're doing it in a way of like, hey, we're not hospitable, all right? Stay away. But now Jacob, just like out of nowhere, he starts to critique their watering the sheep, watering the flock practice. Like, hey, I don't know about where you guys come from, but this isn't how we do it. What are you doing? So it's still high day, so it's the middle of the afternoon. Think, okay, this is hot. This is the hot time of day. We don't come out. And this kind of helps us understand what happens with the Samaritan woman in John 4. And John actually helps us with that. Like, she came out at this time of day, the middle part of the day, so she wouldn't have to deal with anybody else who was there, right? Because of her sin, because of her infidelity, because, you know, she's not a moral woman. She's not a morally upstanding woman. You don't want to be around her, right? So this is kind of similar to that, but nobody's sinning here. Nobody's trying to hide anything here. It's just Jacob is being self-assertive. Like, this is dumb. This is the hottest part of the day, and you're just sitting here. The sheep, they're just sitting here.
I think he's just trying to show off because runs over and kisses her right.
We'll talk about that in a second. We'll talk about that. Yeah. I don't think that's everything it's cracked up to be, but yeah, I mean, you know, yeah. I like to do strong, manly things in front of Tripp and run over and kiss her and say, ah. But yeah, I get it. But he is showing his self-assertive, like, hey, this is the way to do it. Jacob's being Jacob here. He doesn't care about the custom. And he's going to show that. He doesn't know about the custom yet, but he's like, I've got my way. So something to just keep in mind, write down or whatever, you have Jacob's way. He has his way of doing things, and his way of doing things is the right way. This is something that will need to be corrected by God. This is something that needs to be sanctified. And so this is actually setting up for when Jacob wrestles the man by the river, who's the angel of the Lord, right? Okay, so It's not time for the livestock to be gathered together. Water the sheep and go pasture them. So he's giving commands here. So he's really being assertive and trying to exercise authority. But they said, "We cannot until all the flocks are gathered together and the stone is rolled from the mountain. Then we water the sheep." So this is the custom of the place. So we wait for all the flocks, and then we roll the stone away. Remember back up in verse 3, all the shepherds would roll the stone away. So it took great manpower in order to roll this stone away from the mouth of the well. So they wait. But so this doesn't actually explain, or this helps understand what these shepherds are doing, because probably in the background here is like an unwritten rule is first come, first serve. So you bring your flocks early enough to the meeting place, then you got to wait until all of you get there. But then you can water your flocks and then get out of town, get back to where you're pasturing or whatever. So, and this partly explains what Jacob is doing with when Rachel shows up. So this is our custom. We water the sheep after everybody's gotten here. So while he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. So Rachel shows up, but notice that it's her father's. That's her father's sheep. This is going to point out chapter 31. Or is it chapter 30? Sorry. When some of these sheep are going to be part of Jacob's flock, right? And lo and behold, Rachel is going to leave with Jacob here in a few chapters, in chapter 31. So now as soon as Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, Jacob came near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. So Rachel's here, but who is Jacob's attention focused on? Who's Jacob's attention focused on?
His mother.
Well, his mother's brother, Laban. He wants to get on the good side of Laban. So he's not so concerned with Rachel at this point. He's concerned about Laban. All right. So, and I think Moses does this because on a second or third reading, like, well, we know he gets married to Rachel and he loves her. And so he's doing all this for Rachel. And like Moses is saying, well, calm down. Jacob wants to get on Laban's good side, right? Because it all kind of hinges on what happens to Jacob here, all hinges on Laban. Like he's his connection point in this land. All right, so does that make sense? Focuses on Laban here? Okay, then Jacob kissed Rachel and wept aloud. So this would seem to be something that like just contradicts what I just said, right? Because like who kisses? 70-year-old guy, this Rachel's probably not too old, you know, maybe 20s. Likely.
Robert says this was a proper greeting for cousins.
There you go. It's a there's a family greeting.
For joy because he found his relatives.
Good. There's a family greeting. So he's accomplishing his goal of finding Laban, finding Laban's household. And also notice that nothing's said about Rachel and her beauty yet. That's being saved for later on. So there's family, there's kinsmen type of thing, cousins, even in the ancient Near East, but also today with Middle Eastern culture, there's a lot more affection that's openly shown. Probably not in the way that Jacob is doing it here. But again, Jacob's also doing this stone rolling away and watering the sheep for watering Laban's flock. He's asserting himself. So, I mean, there's some of that going on too. But so having said all of that, so does that make sense that Jacob has just undermined the culture, the cultural custom? We wait. And like Jacob says, no, if that's Laban's flock, I'm watering them first. They can, you know, like, hey, Rachel's going to go back and say, this guy, he did an amazing thing. And yeah, rolling the stone away by himself, that's a feat of great strength. So he's not only self-assertive, he's able to actually do what he sets out to accomplish to do. And then he waters the flock. All of that, he's just trying to get himself in with Laban. He undermines the cultural custom in order to do that. This is all setting up for what's about to happen. But then Jacob kissed Rachel and wept aloud. So this wept aloud, we've heard this before. Where have we heard this before? Who else weeps aloud?
Jesus wept.
Before this.
Esau.
So when Esau seeks the blessing from Isaac, he says, Father, do you not have a blessing for me? And Isaac says, no, I've given him everything. I have nothing to give to you. And Esau doubles down. Don't you have even just one blessing? Don't you have something to give to me? And Isaac gives him the exact opposite of what he gave to Jacob. But then it notes that he wept aloud. It's the same words in Hebrew. So why is that important? Well, you have Jacob weeping aloud. He's going to be on the other side of what he did to Isaac and Esau. It's just setting up the cultural custom, the flocks, Rachel, weeping aloud. Everything in this passage is setting up for different elements for what's to come in the next three chapters. You see how that's working? Some of these key words is showing role reversal coming. Okay, so verse 12, and Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's kinsman and that he was Rebekah's son. So her father's kinsman. So Jacob is telling Rachel this. He's Rebekah's son. This partly explains the kissing. She ran and told her father. Rachel's running, and then Laban's going to run. So again, the connection, the point here is not about Rachel, it's about Laban. Jacob informs Rachel what's going on. Now, this is all also Jacob kissing Rachel before telling her who he is. That's another like Jacob thing, like, what are you doing? But it doesn't go again. It doesn't like blow everything up. It works. You see that? So this is also setting up. Well, no matter what Jacob does or no matter what anybody else does to Jacob, it works. It works in Jacob's favor. Okay? Does that make sense?
Yeah, the other men had told him that Rachel was Laban's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So he knew they were cousins.
Right, yeah. Yeah, he knew. Rachel didn't necessarily know. And then he informs Rachel. But like, you know, He kisses her, and he doesn't like, or she doesn't like, just slap him, and or you know whatever. Like it works, seems to work. Okay, so all of this is again this passage verses 1-14. It's setting up for everything else that we're going to see in the next few chapters, and we're seeing some good stuff foreshadowed. We're seeing some bad stuff foreshadowed. We're seeing role reversals. We're seeing Jacob's custom to overturn custom, undermine custom, so on and so forth. Okay, so as soon as Laban heard the news about Jacob, his sister's son, he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. Okay, so a couple of things. First, contrast Laban with the shepherds that Jacob has just met. What's the contrast?
Oh, affection versus...
Open affection, embrace.
Unhospitable.
Yes, the shepherds are inhospitable, right? They want Jacob to go away. So Laban contrasts with the shepherds, right? Okay, so there's a... He is warmly received. He's invited into the home. Now, we have another mention of Rebekah through this... through his sister's son, right here. But Rebekah and then also Ran. This is so Laban has a connection to Rebekah, right? Brother, sister, and they ran. So now we have to think back to chapter 24. Because Laban also came out running. What happened in chapter 24 when Abraham's servant came?
Rebekah ran.
What?
Rebekah ran.
Yeah, but don't think about the running. Think about what happened. What did Abraham's servant bring? Gifts. What?
Jewelry,
yeah. And by the way, the servant actually puts the jewelry on Rebekah before he announces who he is and who he represents. So that actually, the order of that actually parallels what Jacob does here. Jacob doesn't have anything to give Rachel, so he gives her a kiss. The last time somebody from Abraham's family showed up, who profited? Laban and his house, right? So Laban's like, I've been here before. Now, has Jacob been through this? No, he wasn't even born yet, right? Rebekah's his mother. And Rebekah hadn't met Isaac. Like, Jacob has no, like, you know, maybe family stories or whatever, but... So Laban has experience. He knows how this works, right? So is he disappointed when he shows up and he sees that Jacob has nothing? Probably, but that's not going to keep Laban from working out some way to benefit, to profit from this, right? The connection to Rebekah and the running that's happening, the embracing. This is exactly what happened with Abraham's servant back in chapter 24. And so so Jacob told Laban all these things. So what are all these things? It's basically what happened, his mission, what happened in chapter 28. My parents sent me to you to get a wife, right? So now in getting a wife, something that's involved there that we don't necessarily practice, but it's still practiced in some cultures, is there are a couple of things. In order for a man to marry a wife, he pays a bride price, right? And so he's paying the family as part of the marriage marriage contract. The other side of this, and this we'll talk about this more next time when we start to talk about verse 15. But the other side of this is that the bride gets a dowry from her family, right? And so this will come up later on when both Rachel and Leah say, our father has spent our dowry. Like we're like slaves to him, not daughters, right? So this kind of thing is coming up here. So this sets up for, Jacob is here to get a wife. He doesn't intend to get two wives, let alone four wives. He's here to get a wife. So Jacob, he doesn't know anybody. He's totally at Laban's mercy, which we find out is not a good place to be, right? Laban is holding all the cards, all right? And so that sets up for what Laban says here. Surely you are my bone and my flesh. And he stayed with them a month. So this hooks back up with some things earlier on in Genesis. This may be a little bit easier than the he wept aloud or he cried aloud. But surely you are my bone and my flesh. What's familiar about that? Or what chapter?
Genesis chapter like 2.
2, yeah, good. Chapter 2, what happens there? Do you remember?
God creates the woman from the man's rib, wasn't it?
Yeah, from his side, yep. And then the man says about the woman,
You're
bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. So like we're united, we're one, right? Okay, so good. So he's saying this about, hey, we're family, right? My bone and my flesh. Now, what about Shirley? Same area, not chapter 2. Think about chapter 3. You surely will not die. Chapter 2 says, "Surely you will surely die." And the serpent says, "You surely will not die." There's a contrast here. And so what's interesting about this is that this can be positive and negative. So so it can go one of two ways. It's either really warm. Like the warm embrace that he has received. Surely, yes, you are my bone, you are my flesh, we are family, come into my house, I'll take care of you, you know, like not holding anything back, no agenda, no ill motives or anything like that. It could be taken that way, or it could be taken in a negative way, which is kind of surely, it's a grudging way. I guess you've convinced me that you are that you're part of the family. We're family, and so you're my nephew. All of that. You might as well stay. Like that. So, but you can say that without giving away that you're not too excited about this, or you can say that in a way that it sounds positive, but you're actually meaning it in a negative way. Obviously, this sets up for the. Sure, you can marry her. 7 years? Yeah, that'll be the wages for her, right? So Laban is playing with words in order to gain benefit, right? And so this basically sets up for the first deception where Laban outwits, he deceives Jacob, and that starts in verse 15. But before we go there, remember that he stayed with him a month. This picks up on what Rebecca said in Genesis 27:44. Just a few days. This will also be said in 29:20 when Jacob works for 7 years and it seemed to him but a few days because of his love for Rachel. So this chapter, like, not much happens, but it totally sets the foundation for what is about to happen in for the next three chapters. So that's what I have. We won't go any further than that tonight. So what do you have? What questions, comments, consternations? I didn't tell you what I was titling this. I think what's going on throughout these chapters is God is fulfilling his promise to protect Jacob, but doing so through the experience of being deceived. So he has he is not only fulfilling his promise to Jacob for protection, but then also fulfilling his promise to Abraham and to Isaac about seed, about descendants. So he's fulfilling it. He's fulfilling that promise, but then he's also doing it with a purpose to sanctify Jacob, to make him blameless. I think this is a long, this will be a long process. So basically this is God's grace toward Jacob to turn everything that he's done up to this point to Esau and to Isaac against him, but then also work through those deceptions to bring about the fulfillment of his promises. So, yeah. Fulfilling promises and sanctification. Not just two, he needed four.
Four.
Although the Bilhah and Zilpah, they're actually never named. Well, are they? I'm going to hold on to that. But yeah, and God doesn't, like, Jacob does not intend to have more than one wife. He's sent to get a wife, just like Abraham had, and just like Abraham had one at a time. And just like Isaac. And so he doesn't go off intending to do that. So, but that is what happened. And again, why does he end up with more than one wife? It's because he's hoodwinked into marrying two, right? So, and working 14 years for both of them. So,
but the last seven were not as, didn't go quite as quick.
They didn't, no, they, no, it's not mentioned that, that they seemed but a few days. Right, because the next 7 years are basically it's this strife between Rachel and Leah. Right? And they're just doing battle over their husband, and you got to feel for Leah, cuz it's like you got to feel for both of them.
But you really got to feel for Leah.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk about. And so all she wants is for her husband to love her.
Yeah. Right.
And she never gets it. She does get honor in the end, but she never gets that. And but even then,
the
when
line of Christ does come.
What's that?
The line of Christ does come.
Yes, yeah. Her fourth son is Judah.
She finally says this time.
Yes, I'll praise. Yeah, yeah. Then, but later on, after that, when she bears her fifth or sixth, basically when she hires Jacob with the mandrakes. She turns it back on her husband. She names the son in light of what she wants from her husband. So that kind of sticks with her the entire time.
Was that a custom too that you wouldn't know who you're married till the next morning?
So she's totally veiled.
Was the custom to stay veiled?
So we have to assume that it was dark. That he didn't know. And we also have to assume that he was quite merry at the time. He'd had a lot to drink.
He was a little drunk.
Right. But throughout the ceremony, she would have stayed veiled.
Yeah.
In Africa, there's no electricity. We're not talking about electricity. There's right. No lights.
Yeah. So, but the other thing is, I think that there's no indication that Leah is the one under the veil during the ceremony. And so the switch doesn't happen until the night at night. So consummating the marriage, like it, yeah. So, Laban totally pulls a fast one on him. So, yeah.
Rachel doesn't have a very long life either.
No, she doesn't. She doesn't, yeah. And she, yeah, that's what I was going to bring up is Jacob loves Rachel, but Rachel comes to Jacob and says, "Give me children or I die." Mm-hmm. And Jacob does not respond the same way that his father does when he was in the same situation. Mm-hmm. He doesn't pray. He doesn't counsel. He doesn't instruct. He says, "I'm not God." Like, all right, husbands, don't do that. And that's actually what sets up for Rachel's maidservant to be given to Jacob. So it's crazy. Like when we get to the end of both Jacob's sons being born, Jacob's children being born, and the flock situation, like if we don't come to the conclusion of like, this is crazy. Such a dysfunctional family and Jacob using branches or reeds or whatever cutting them, stripping them, and that's how he gets the flock that he gets. Like, that's crazy. If we come to that conclusion, we got the point. Like, there's no other way that this would have happened except for God protecting and prospering Jacob against all the odds. Yeah. So
why didn't he just tell them, no, I don't want to marry your servants?
He's already done it. Oh, wait, oh, I'm sorry, with Bilhah and Zilpah?
Yeah.
So yeah, there is custom there that it's those children, the children that come from that union would be legally recognized not only as Jacob's, but also the primary wives. So he could have said no, maybe. I don't know. I mean, Abraham didn't say no.
It seems like he just added a lot of extra stress to his life.
Jacob is not known to make wise decisions, at least at this point in his life.
What Rachel said kind of reminded me of what my wife said, don't give any more kids unless you die.
That's just flipped. Oh, but now you have all these great grandchildren now. It's totally worth it. Totally worth it.
Kids are all grown. They're beautiful. They're grown.
They're now. Yeah. Trip would say, like, man, I love them when they get to that toddler age, the cutest age is 2 and 3. I cannot stand them when they are infants and babies and all. They only need me. Like, she loves other people's kids. It's her own kids. Yes, including you, Jude. That, like...
It's just the opposite. She likes little ones.
Yeah. I mean, I love the babies.
That's why
the infants.
When my wife turned 2 or 3, we had another one.
Yeah, so... Okay, so... that is... that's it for tonight. We'll pick it up at verse 15 next time. So let's pray. Father, thank you so much for your word and for how you are sovereign and you're wise. You chose to use Jacob's circumstances to protect him, to show him how you fulfill your promises and that you do indeed fulfill your promises. And you alone are wise to use this kind of dysfunction and deception to bring about your purposes to create your nation. And with this kind of history, it is history of origin. It is something that Israel should look back on and be amazed at your how you work and be amazed at your grace. That this is the kind of nation that you built with this kind of past. You keep your promises and you are to be praised for that. So, Father, help us to be to pursue sanctification and to do so over the long haul, seeing how Jacob has changed through all of these events. Father, give us wisdom in our marriages. Help us to learn even just small lessons from how Jacob treats his family and how he and how he is treated. Not just in our marriages, but also in our family life, that we would learn the lessons that Jacob's life has to teach us. So please help us. We thank you for Jesus, and we pray this in his name. Amen.